Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gaberti, and this is the podcast for entrepreneurs who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. Money is the lifeline of a business. And to extend that idea even further, your clients and customers are that lifeline for your business since they give you the revenue that helps you to keep going. So while we all know the importance of clients and customers, for some people, it can feel difficult just to get a single client or customer. So while this episode will focus on getting more clients, the same principles can also be applied to getting more customers as well. So let's dive in. Today's guest is an online business and marketing strategist. Some of her clients have had $35,000 months, and others have added hundreds of ideal clients to their lists in days. She has several training courses that explore mindset, generating income, and landing clients. But to dip your toe in the water, you can also get today's guest's free guide on landing 16 new clients in 3 weeks over at the show notes page at markgaberti.com/E116. Today's guest is none other than Melissa Farr. Melissa, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you on as well, because clients, getting them, that's something so important to discuss. But right before we get into that, I'd love to get some backstory. So why did you become an online business and marketing strategist? What first pulled you in?
Well, I guess it started a long time ago, my entrepreneurial journey. My dad actually helped me and my sister do a pet sitting business when we were in high school. And we took care of like all kinds of animals growing up. So that was like my first taste of realizing I could make money, like on my own terms. And then, you know, I actually got a degree in musical theater, and my side gig was being a personal trainer. And I just kept getting all these different tastes of making money, doing things that I like to do. And I started to realize that I had like a business mind, which eventually led me to realizing that the freedom of doing this online and my ability to really make sales were two things I could put together. So I started this business after meandering for like 5 years as an entrepreneur in August of 2014.
Thank you for sharing with us that backstory. And I mean, since your beginnings, you've been able to acquire a lot of clients, you've been able to help people build their client bases. But one of the things that I feel like people have a problem with is I feel like it's getting easier for us to create the product or service. Like, there are some people who are still at that stage, and there have been past episodes about that. But for people who do have that product or service, I feel like one of the things that people struggle with is positioning that product or service in a way that the clients are very interested in what you have to offer. So how do we create that positioning with our offers so that more people become clients?
Sure. I think there's a lot going on in the online world, obviously, today. I mean, it's just at our fingertips all the time. There's so many people always on mobile devices. So you've got to be really compelling to make sales. But I think it's a misconception that you have to be doing something completely different from everybody else. You know, what I do is not necessarily profound. I do, you know, marketing strategy, and there's a lot of people out here who do that. But I think there's a couple things that can help you position yourself in a way that makes you an expert and makes you stand out differently from other people. Number one, it's really important to decide what your specialty is. When I first started doing marketing strategy, I really decided to focus in on being great at sales. And when I started launching programs online, 90% of the clients who came into my program said, I signed up for this because I resonate with your brand, but also because I need help with sales. And I knew that you were an online strategist who really was great at that. And so just the fact that I chose something to specialize in and not just be like any other online marketing strategist, that helped me narrow down the numbers of people who were doing things that I was doing. So that's one piece of it that really made a big difference for me. So I'm always telling my clients to say, okay, I get that this is your thing, but if you had to say your one specialty, what would it be? And then on top of that, I really talk about the three P's a lot of the time, and they actually help to position your offer. So there's three reasons that humans buy. They buy because they understand that you're talking to them. So that's P for person. You've got to be clear on who that person is. And then they also buy for two other really important reasons. And it's usually an emotional reason that people invest. One, P is to avoid pain. People do not want to experience pain, and they're actually more motivated by pain sometimes than they are by the things that they want. But they still are motivated by the things they want. So the other P stands for pleasure. Like, what pleasurable experience do they want to have? What is that end outcome they desire? So for all my clients, I tell them, for you to position your offer has to specifically speak to that one person you're talking to. And it has to be very clear to them that you understand their pain. That's the second P. And it's got to be really clear to them exactly what they're going to get that is the ultimate outcome they want, that pleasurable outcome. So those are those three P's. Once you get really great at talking about those three P's and addressing those in just every title of a freebie or a piece of content or program, people start to pay attention. But most people get really stuck talking about how they do what they do. And how is not something that makes people want to pull their credit card out.
And I do love that idea of including those P's as you're positioning your product, because there's another saying that people want to know more about the benefits that they'll receive and not just the features of what you have to offer. And once you get the principles down, there are just so many tactics you can use to promote and reach out to clients. And one of those methods is Facebook Live. And in fact, you have a free guide, three free ways to get clients using Facebook Live, which will also be in the show notes. But I'm wondering if you could slightly open the door a little bit and just let us know some ideas of how I can use Facebook Live, and then we can get that free guide later.
Definitely. Oh my God, I love live video. And yeah, kind of tying in the three P's and then how I might use that on Facebook Live. You know, it's so powerful these days to clock some serious time with your audience. Like I said, there's a lot of things going on in the online world. If they can at the very least hear your voice, but see your face on video, it's a really great way for them to start to build know, like, and trust, which we know when someone knows you, likes you, and trusts you, they are far more likely to say yes. And they start to warm up and become not just a lead, but a fan or a follower. And so I love using live video. Like I said, my degree was in musical theater. So like for me to be on video and things like that is really, really fun for me. And I think if that's something that you love, I really push any entrepreneurs to get on video as much as they can these days. It's just such a powerful thing. What I like to do a lot of the time is when I do Facebook Live, there's a couple tips that I would love to share right away. First of all, when you decide to write some words about the fact that you're going on live, I always think of a title that includes those three P's, you know, and it's got to be something really, really juicy. Like you said, people want to know what they're going to get. They decide in less than 3 seconds if spending time with you, text, video, anything, is worth it based on what they believe they're going to get by the words that you've used. So if I know that a lot of my clients are having a hard time overcoming the objection, I can't afford it on a sales call, I might title my Facebook Live the exact thing to say when someone tells you, I can't afford it, to hear yes 80% of the time on your sales calls. You know, like that is a very specific title. Anybody who's having that problem is going to be like, ooh, I got to listen to that. You've got to push the I need that button with your titles of your Facebook Lives. It can't just be, oh, that sounds nice. There's too many people with marketing that sounds nice, but it's not the kind of marketing where people buy or they decide to spend time with you. So number one, have a super, super juicy benefit laden what you're going to get title for your Facebook Live. Then what I do is anything I say I'm going to share as my content on Facebook Live, I damn well share it. I'm not trying to put out a cool title just to get people to join. I also want to be compelling and I want to be generous in the content that I deliver. There's a lot of people who think they'll make more sales if they pitch more often. I make so many sales just because I share my absolute best content. And it's just a piece of my best content. It's not all of it. And that's really what I make sure to do consistently with my audience. I do it a lot in a Facebook group. It's such a great way to kind of like build a list in some kind of way, have a captive audience. So my Facebook group is, you know, it's getting toward 18,000 people in there. So if I go live, I've got a lot of viewers, and I have that great title, and then I share really, really good content. And during the Facebook Live, I'll probably also ask a lot of questions and try to get them engaging and talking and commenting. And what I do is at the end of sharing great content, at that point, you've kind of earned a pitch a little bit more if you've shared good stuff, especially if you do it consistently, because people will flock to you if you have amazing content. And at the end, you know, to go ahead and pitch something that is congruent with the topic that you shared on and is kind of like giving them the rest of the pieces they still need, that's the way to go. So let's say that I did a Facebook Live again about how to overcome the objection I can't afford it on a sales call. Well, at the end of that, I might say, hey, but, you know, if you want to cut the amount of objections you get in half, then you got to learn how to structure the entire sales call from start to finish perfectly. Well, here's what you still need. And I point that out and maybe offer my sales course. It's congruent with a topic. It's the rest of what they needed. And I gave them really good information to position myself an expert and show them I know what I'm talking about.
That is some really great advice. I mean, you're creating these Facebook Lives on problems that your potential clients are facing. So when they see you deliver this high amount of value based on this problem that they're facing that they know you can solve, they're more likely to become your clients. So it's really interesting how you tackle the problems specific that your potential clients would have, and then you posing yourself as a solution and actually being the solution within the live video and not just pitching. And when you are providing all this value, that's going to make people want you more because people realize you're getting someone really legit and not someone who's just going to keep pitching. And they like, if you keep pitching, then people have no idea what they can actually expect. So I really do love that approach. But when we do get clients, and some people listening to this may already have a few clients using their service, I feel like we have the clients, but I don't feel like we're really good at asking for referrals because you don't want to rub someone the wrong way. Like something as simple as, do you know anyone? That could send to some people think, oh, that could send like mixed signals. Like, I don't want to like take advantage or anything like that. But how can we properly ask for referrals so that your clients are okay with giving them and you do get them?
Great. Well, I think in all areas of business, while the online world is changing really fast and there's always kind of a new challenge, there's something about business that isn't changing, and that is the importance of building solid relationships. That will never, ever, ever change. And it is never too soon to start reaching out and building relationships with other people in your industry or other people who kind of go side by side with what you offer. For instance, I work with an attorney who kind of specializes working with online entrepreneurs. And so we work really well as people who refer back and forth. You know, I might refer some clients to her who really need support, and she might refer clients to me who really want to learn more about online marketing strategy. But we do different things, so we're not competing. We're really complementing each other while we share the same target market. So I know that she's not necessarily a client of mine, although she has actually bought some of my products, so technically she could be. But I think I want to expand this a little bit to say that you don't only ask for referrals from people who are your clients. There's a couple ways to go about this. If they are a client, I would just say, I never really reach out and ask for a referral until I feel like I've really, really put the relationship as the first priority. When my client is extremely happy and they're getting fantastic results and I just really trust that we have a fantastic relationship, that might be a time where I might kind of test the waters and just say, hey, you know, I'm actually filling up a couple more spots. If you happen to know of anybody, I'd love, you know, for you to let me know, because I'm looking for more clients who are like you, because I love working with you, you know, and I figure you know more people like that. So that's a powerful way to go about it. But I guess my biggest advice would just be, you don't want to ask too soon. The time to ask is when you feel fantastic about the work you're doing together and you know that they do too. And that kind of brings up another piece. I actually use Facebook Live to survey my leads all the time. Like I jump up and just say, hey, I'm thinking about doing content about this. What do you think? One, to get them engaged and build a relationship, but two, to get buzz going for that content. Three, to get feedback. I do the same thing with my one-on-one clients. I'm constantly, like after every session with them, they fill out a form that says what they thought and any feedback for me, which means I always know when my relationship with a client is at a point where it makes sense for me to ask for a referral. The other really, really cool tip, even if you don't have clients yet, or you do, but you don't want to ask them for referrals yet, a really cool practice is make a list of 10 to 20 influencers that you think you would love to be in touch with, you'd love to build a relationship with, and they have some really good referral potential. A fantastic thing to do is put a date on your calendar and send them like a 2-line email once a month, every month, and get top of mind, start to build a relationship, and never ask them for a damn thing. Just send them one email a month that's like, hey, I wanted to introduce myself because I've seen some of your work. Be in the know about what they're doing and give them a compliment. Like that's the whole email. Then the next month, maybe you say, hey, I found this article and I just was thinking with you. I thought I'd pass it along. Hope this is helpful. You know, maybe the third month, it's just like, I saw someone else is doing a launch just like yours. They use this strategy and I was wondering, maybe you already use it too, but in case you don't, I thought I'd pass it along. I hope it's helpful. You know, like every single month, it's like a 2-3 liner, because people who are successful, you want to be influencers with, they don't just sit around and read their emails from people they don't know all day. They actually get a million emails from people who are asking things of them and terrible at building relationships. So you will stand out like crazy when you are helpful, give them compliments, they'll look you up. And if they know they get their monthly email from you, you will start to build a relationship with them. And to think about people who maybe come right before or after your service, let's say that, I'm helping my clients again, and I know once they start a business, they're going to need some legal advice. So my attorney comes right after, right? Or maybe one of my clients is a stylist, and she's always referred from photographers. So build relationships that really, you know, kind of go back and forth with what you do, and then you can kind of enhance that pool. Maybe it's influencers, maybe it's peers, maybe it's also clients.
Melissa, thank you for sharing those really awesome insights. And I do feel like people think about that referral. Like, I feel like we all know it's important, but being able to ask for it, and the advice was really spot on, like making sure the timing's right. And even the way that you ask, it's a mix of the compliment, but also permission marketing, where you're saying if you know someone. So like you're making it their choice to act. You're not it's not like you want a very specific, you're implying very strongly that you want a very specific result. You're saying if you want to, or if you know someone, that's giving the client, the person on the other end of the conversation, the choice of whether to act or not. And I feel like not enough of us are doing that, allowing the other person to act instead of like making a strong implication like, hey, this is what I want you to do.
Yeah, that probably won't go over very well. Give people an easy out when you ask them for favors. And I just was even thinking about, a peer friend of mine who's an amazing influencer. You know, we were friends for over a year before I actually reached out and said, hey, I want to be an affiliate of yours. And I'm sure she was thinking I would be a great affiliate partner of hers from the moment we met. But she built a relationship so well that I actually asked her, told her I was interested right before she sent an email out to me. So like we were in sync, you know, the timing was good. But I mean, again, we built a relationship for a year. So that's why you want to start early and you want to make sure that you're not, like you said, kind of like jumping in too soon. That can really make things not feel good fast.
And I mean, it is great that you do build these relationships. And I mean, that's one of the joys of having a podcast like the Breakthrough Success Podcast. But to explore further, one of the goals people have is to get more clients. There are other goals that people have. Getting clients, definitely one of the goals that a lot of people have in common. But not everyone achieves their goals. Some people, they feel stuck and they want to be able to tap into their full potential. And I'm wondering, what do you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
Sure. I think there's two main things that I've experienced. One is like the mindset piece. I think sometimes our brain just gets in the way of wondering if things are possible. Sometimes it's confidence. Sometimes we've made enough offers and gotten enough no's that it can be pretty darn discouraging. I had a friend who did, gosh, what did she do? Like 54 sales calls in a row. They all said no. And I remember listening to her on a sales call. I told her this too, so we kind of have laughed about it before. I remember listening to her on a call because we were in a group program together. And I was thinking, oh man, this girl's never going to make it, you know? And the next year she did $1 million in sales. It was crazy. So I think there's a certain amount of resilience that you just need. Like, entrepreneurs are not for the faint of heart. You know, you've got to be really resilient and be committed to having a good time and being willing to test and tweak over and over and over again. And then you'll get some things happen, but, you just got to stay in the game. And I think that's kind of more of a mental game. And then the second thing that I think is so huge is that people just get overwhelmed and distracted by focusing on the wrong things. There are so many things that you feel like you should be doing or people say to do. And it's a lot of really good advice. The problem is you've got to keep it simple so that you can keep it up. And there's so many different ways to get clients. Choose a strategy. And let time support the strategy. Time is the most underused strategy ever. People kind of throw something out there, but they don't stick with it long enough to master it and let themselves get traction. So they're kind of like throwing all kinds of spaghetti at the wall in all different kinds of directions, and it's hard to know what's working and what's not. You've got to do less better, and you've got to stick to money-making tasks and actions. And I actually have 5 categories. Every single day, I make sure that I'm doing something in each of these 5 categories. Number 1, something for my mindset, like meditation or visualization about my success. Number 2, I do one thing every single day to build my online following. And if I have like ads running, then great, already done. Number 3, I do something every single day to nurture my community and my following. Maybe I'm mailing my list. Maybe I'm doing a Facebook Live in my group. Number 4, I make sure that every single day I have a plan for when I'm going to make offers and what I'm going to make. And then 5, I make sure that I am friggin' fantastic at closing the deal. That means I have great language to talk about what I do. I feel confident on my offer. I'm fantastic at my sales conversation. If I do something from each of those categories every day, Monday through Friday, or even like Tuesday through Thursday, it's just about being consistent in those money-making categories, because all those categories will directly relate to you making money. But we get stuck on so many other things that aren't necessarily money-making tasks that may, you know, at some point when integrated into a strategy, make sense. But sometimes we don't know what we don't know, and we're just doing a lot of little things that aren't necessarily directly impacting our ability to have cash come through the door.
I love this idea of focusing on the activities that are actually generating revenue. And yes, there are other activities that they don't specifically generate revenue, but they're necessary for you to do, but you should be decreasing the time in those areas, maybe even delegating those so you could spend more time on the activities where, hey, you're making money doing these activities. And you really hit it on the head for what holds most people back. It's the entrepreneur. Like, you got to be really persistent. And I mean, 54 sales calls, y'all getting no's. I mean, that's really rough. I mean,
that is rough.
I know that Dr. Seuss had a hard time with his books, like several dozen rejections, but definitely not 54. So yeah, we do have to face certain persistence, and it's critical that we're able to do that. And part of that is being able to face challenges. When you see persistence, that we need to summon it, it's usually to summon it in order to combat a challenge. So with that in mind, Melissa, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you face in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Sure. A big challenge that I faced in my journey. Well, I would say one of the biggest challenges is when I first began my business. You know, I've been an entrepreneur for a while. I guess I'm, how old am I now? I'm like 33 now. I started when I was 25. So that's 8 years. But then I was an entrepreneur even before that, doing my pet sitting business. So, you know, I really have had the entrepreneurial bug my whole life. But after college was when I really decided, you know, I'm going to go out and do this on my own. I want to work for myself. And I actually haven't had that many jobs working for other people. I've almost worked for myself my whole life. And so once you get a taste of that, I'm sure anyone listening agrees, it's hard to ever imagine yourself kind of going back and working for someone else. But as I said in the beginning, I meandered so many different times in my business. You know, I was like being a personal trainer, and then I was doing health coaching, and I was doing life coaching, and I was doing relationship coaching. And like, I had to get that clarity to figure out, okay, where am I actually going to land? And I made that decision, you know, around online marketing strategy, because I'm totally obsessed with it. But I can't say that it went very well in the beginning. I started this specific business in August of 2014. I didn't make a sale until January, and I only made one sale. By the time April of 2015 rolled around, I was $45,000 in debt, and I'd only made $5,000. And, you know, that might sound better or worse than what other people have experienced, but it was pretty darn stressful at the time. So I just kept opening credit cards, making investments. And the one thing I did have was like trust in myself. I was like, you know what? I am a super smart woman. I totally got a business mind. I'm fantastic at sales. I know my offers are good. I realize I can't get anyone on the phone, and the people who do get on the phone with me are totally the wrong clients, but okay, I can fix that. Like, I'll start trying to talk in certain ways to get the right people. So I honestly think that was the hardest time that I've had, was just, you think about that, was August, September, November, December, January, February. March was the first month I did about 20,000 sales in 2015. But I had so much debt by that time that, you know, it just started to help me get out of a certain place. And right after that 20K month, I made only six the next month before things started going up again. So I think that was just a really scary time for me. I used to go through the grocery store and like put on my calculator, like how much money everything I was putting in the cart was costing. And then I just go back and like put back food and stuff, because I always was running out of money and not having enough. And, you know, this is like me being a privileged white woman. There are people who have it far worse. I'm an entitled person as far as humans on this planet go. And that was still really challenging for me, you know? So I think there are a lot of people who don't even have the opportunities that I've had that are making, you know, making things out of themselves. So I think I have this mentality, like, you're a privileged person. If you can't make this work, that's just ridiculous. And I just had that mindset. And so I was like kind of scared shitless most of the time. I called and cried to my mom and sometimes to my husband, who was then my boyfriend. And I was like, oh no, this is going to work. But that was the time when I started having some serious talks to myself. And I was like, okay, Mel, here's the things you got to focus on. And that's when I put together those five tasks. Like, here are the money-making areas. You don't do a damn thing until everything you're doing falls into these categories. And when that's over, you can decide if you want to work more. But these are the only things you need to focus on. It all has to be powerful money-making actions. And then I got into meditation and visualization big time, and I do it every single morning before I was allowed to work on my business.
And it's interesting in your challenge how that idea of persistence comes up, where you had to stick with this for several months when you weren't seeing any sales, to the point of going in debt and then eventually getting your way out of there because you had your back on a wall and you said, this is going to change. I need to figure out what I need to be doing. And then you did deep reflection and you were able to do that. So I do feel like in any type of challenge, we can do that. Like, it's easier to get through a challenge if you take a step back, look at everything that's really happening, and figure out where you need to be spending your time. And one of the things that I like to spend my time doing, this helps me get through a lot of challenges, also fires me up for the start of any new day, is to read a book. And with that in mind, I'm wondering if you could share with us three great books that you believe would have a big impact on us.
Sure. So one of the books that I absolutely, absolutely love is The Law of Divine Compensation. It's by Marianne Williamson. And it's about like law of attraction and being able to attract wealth, basically. And the first time I read this book, I actually doubled my income that month. And then I doubled it again the next month. It just, you know, spoke to me personally about like my divine right to wealth and some of that more spiritual woo-woo stuff that I'm super duper into, as well as the practical pieces. And it just put me in this mindset of believing it was possible for me to create the kind of income I wanted to create. So that was huge. Also, I love the book Leveraging the Universe. It's by Mike Dooley. If you get it on Audible, it's actually like a series of him speaking, and it's not exactly like a book, which is also really fun. But if you order the book Leveraging the Universe, he talks a lot about universal law and you know, how to really, basically how to act like the person who knows things are going to work. And whether you, you know, believe in things like the law of attraction or not, the fact is what we believe is exactly what determines the kind of actions we take and the way we're showing up. So that was powerful. And lastly, I love the book The Right Questions by Debbie Ford. It's awesome. Debbie has like 10 questions in the book that basically really help you to cut to the chase when you're feeling indecisive and make decisions about, you know, which way to go and what to do. And as entrepreneurs, it's like, you know, the last thing you want to do is hem and haw and tire kick. Just make decisions and go forward. What you need to learn is going to come from the actions that you take, not from kind of sitting on your ass in your bedroom and, you know, meditating only and deciding that, you know, once you're clear, then you'll move forward. You've got to create clarity and you've got to make decisions and be decisive and not just sit around and go back and forth. Commit to something and go for it. If it's not going to work out, you'll learn along the way and then you can course correct. But one of my mentors said to me, you can't course correct if you're standing still. So her book basically has these awesome questions that are just like, the second that you ask them, you're like, oh, now I know what to do. Like, now I know what the right thing is. So I talk a lot to my clients about be decisive, make decisions, commit and go for it. And stop tire kicking. It's silly and it's also boring. And it's boring to listen to. It's boring to watch. It's boring for your followers.
Melissa, thank you for sharing those great book recommendations and a bunch of books that I'll have to be adding to my reading list because some of them I'm hearing them for the first time. So you definitely expanded on my reading list. And one of the things I like to do as we head towards the end of any episode is I'd like to flip the tables on anyone who's on the show. So the way I do that is I've asked you a bunch of questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we should be asking ourselves more often?
Yeah. One of the questions that I think we should be asking ourselves more often is, what's the most enjoyable thing I can do? What's the most enjoyable way to do it? And what's the most efficient way to do it? People are most creative when they're joyful, when they're having a good time. And I think sometimes as business owners, we get bogged down in all the things we think we should do. That's why I do so much mindset work at the beginning of the day. I'm always kind of paying attention to what's going to make me the happiest that I enjoy doing. Those are the things that I'm going to do really well. You know, what's the easiest way for me to go about doing this? I think a fantastic question to ask yourself literally every single day is, how can I make this simpler? You know, how can I do less better? Those are some of the best questions. How can I start my day on my terms? You know, how can this be more fun? You're not going to stay in the game unless you're able to simplify and have more fun. Otherwise, it's pretty easy as an entrepreneur to drive ourselves crazier.
Definitely. I mean, we have all these hours to choose from, and we could either like the freedom, like as long as we're able to determine what to do during that time. And those questions really do make us think about the work we're doing and to take a more simple view. And Melissa, I can't thank you enough for sharing these great questions and wonderful insights throughout our time together. And for Breakthrough Success listeners who want to learn more, you can head over to the show notes. That's markgabrita.com/E116. There will be the links to Melissa's free guides we talked about, landing 16 new clients in 3 weeks, and also the other guide, 3 free ways to get clients using Facebook Live. Those will be in the show notes. You could also head over to Melissa Farr, P-H-A-R-R, .com to head over to her website. Melissa, it was such a pleasure to have you on the show. I can't thank you enough for sharing all of your great insights with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I had a good time, and I hope it was really helpful.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgabrita.com/retweet.